This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
And you're listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass. Macca.
Misha Ketchell is the editor of The Conversation. Misha's been a regular guest during the year. And we have Misha in because independent media is what we all want. Doesn't matter where you are on the political spectrum, you actually want independent media. If you want to read right-wing media and left-wing media, you're most welcome. But if you actually want to know the facts, independent media is where you'll find it.
Good morning to you, Misha. Misha. Just after I practiced joining them, I don't know why I had to do that. So how's your week been?
It's been a good week, I think. It's certainly actually, speaking of independent media, been quite a good week for journalism. I think the fact that Time magazine named four journalists in a newspaper as its person of the year was quite significant, given that we're sort of at a time when journalists are routinely run down by the President of the United States, and when journalism is, you know, in quite difficult circumstances. The fact that Time magazine sort of stood up for independent journalists was important.
It's, you know, and their personal, in the past it's been Man of the Year, is always significant.
So what's been your political highlight in the last week?
God, political highlight. I think the biggest thing for me that's been really significant in the past week is the release of the report into digital platforms by the ACCC.
Yep.
And what that is really looking at is the way in which, in particular, Google and Facebook are affecting the, you know, the business model for journalism, amongst other things, sort of the extent to which they wield market power. And it was really, it was a very interesting and good report. Rod Sims, the chairman of the ACCC, seems to be quite interested in the questions of how you get a public good like quality journalism in an environment where Google and Facebook get, you know, more than 60% of the advertising dollars, where they've got massive market control in terms of what people read and see. A website like The Conversation, for example, 60% of our traffic comes from Google and Facebook. So when they change their algorithm or they do something else, it has a big impact on us, and it's the same with all publishers, with all media outlets, big and small. So one of the questions is, if you believe in, care about a sort of free independent media, how do you create an environment in which media companies can pay journalists and can make money from their journalism when all of the money is actually going to these two American companies, basically?
So what are the recommendations in this report? So how do you actually change that?
So there are lots of recommendations, and at the moment they're just preliminary recommendations. There'll be more serious ones in June next year. But they're looking at things...
So this is really about just generating some further discussion and thinking around how we might sort of really nail what a way forward might look like.
Yeah, at this point. But there are a few things, one of which is making Google and Facebook accountable for the algorithm, so more transparent about how they decide what content gets served up, which has been a big criticism, because you get a lot of misinformation served up. Media outlets don't get priority, perhaps at times when they should, when they're providing trusted or reliable information. They talked about having an ombudsman who can deal with complaints about privacy breaches by those companies as well. There's a lot of issues around, in particular, the way in which they use basically standard form contracts. So you want something, you've got to click on something that's 27 pages. They know no one reads it. And then that's used basically to, you know, you sort of effectively sign away your rights to privacy. So there's recommendations around trying to sort of tighten up the rules on that. And then there's some recommendations around ways in which you might help independent media. So one of which is tax deductibility for subscriptions, one of which is some other special tax treatment for journalistic activities. So there are some things there that are quite good. And for a competition regulator, like the ACCC, which can be very dry. It can be very much we're just going to think about advertising markets and competition in those markets. The fact that they've actually turned their attention to journalism as a public good, I think it's a positive thing. So, you know, they're just discussion points at this point. And obviously we've got an election coming up and there's a whole bunch of things that are going to change in Australian politics. But the fact that the Australian...
Hopefully.
Yes. Well, but the fact that the Australian regulator has... taken quite a strong stance is significant. It's also significant because globally, regulators are trying to deal with these huge American companies. Europe has started doing some things. And basically, Rod Sims in his press conference this week was saying, he is talking to regulators overseas. They all talk to each other. And it's a little bit of a part, I think, of a global movement sort of saying, okay, enough's enough. This power does need to be curtailed in the interests of consumers, in the interests of citizens, in the interests of the different countries in which these media companies operate.
So my issue, and this is a little bit like another report that was released during the course of the week, the Ruddock Review was released during course of the week.
Yes.
And I think both of these pieces of work are deep and informative and very important, but are so technical and so dry in the way in which the issues are presented that most people just, I reckon, would switch off. And people are looking for leadership around these issues, but unfortunately these reports themselves are really out of accessibility range. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's true. I guess I would have perhaps a different attitude to the Religious Freedom Report because of the political circumstances in which it was created.
Mm.
I sort of feel like it was a sop to a certain set of views and, I'm not quite sure it's inspired a particularly productive conversation. But having said that, I do think that often in a political process you need to have that sort of technical fact-finding, gathering part of a process, and then it gains momentum and then it spills over into a more public, conversation. So I'm not saying... saying that they're long and technical and boring is absolutely right. The digital platform review is 400 pages and nobody can read that. But
The religious inquiry is an 85-page report.
Yeah.
But it is actually complex.
It's dense, yeah. It's dense. And also the recommendations are, when you read through them, they're sort of vague. Like one is, consult with the states on what we're going to do about...
They certainly are vague.
Yeah. Hmm. But look, sometimes you do need to go through the process. I think it was very interesting that, the Prime Minister said he wants to legislate to protect religious freedom before the next election, I think.
Before LGBTI kids being discriminated against in school.
That's right, yeah.
But because...
That's gone out of the window.
What did you think of... He gave one of the reasons he delved down into some census data and said that particular ethnic groups and also new immigrants to Australia have a higher level of faith than, let's just say, Caucasians. So Scott Morrison has discovered that, Tamils or Hindus or Muslims or Calathumpians have a higher percentage of religious faith, so therefore we've got to protect them.
Well, it goes back to the question, I think, the last time we discussed this matter, which is protect them from what?
Yeah.
There is no...
Protect them from us.
There's no real evidence
from tax and money.
Well, anybody is really, impinging on religious freedom. And I think that the current arrangements, particularly in most states, work reasonably well. So, it's not a very convincing argument. But,
it's not, is it?
But we don't, we shouldn't forget that this government is now, even amongst its own members, recognising that it is hated in the community. I was in Canberra recently and I was talking to some very senior ministers in the coalition, and they were saying they're coming for us with baseball bats. And I think that's really true. And one of the things that they were saying is, in particular women hate us, LGBTI community hates us.
Young people
hate them. They've actually managed to alienate pretty much everybody, which is in some ways promising, because I think it does potentially herald, hopefully, a
new beginning.
A sea change, a new beginning. And people are really talking in quite optimistic ways now about things like the role of government. There are a lot of think tanks that are talking about... We've also had this 40 years of basically arguing that private sector is good and everything that governments do is bad. And in actual fact, what that's done is that's sort of stymied the effectiveness of the public service. It's stymied policy making. There's a review of the public service underway currently, and there's a lot of thinking going into how we rebuild government and rebuild our public sector. And I think that's potentially for the good.
Yes, yes. Unfortunately, though, these things are always subject to the whim of the government of the day, and the tide can change. You know, I recall having been in bureaucratic roles where I've had an account manager in the Department of Health, and I could never, ever have their phone number, name and email address in my contact book for more than 5 minutes before it changed officer again.
Yeah.
So whenever I needed something, I was struggling to find a contact point in the Commonwealth Public Service. On the other hand...
Perhaps it's because no one wanted to talk to you.
Well, on the other hand, what I'd end up with is you know, bureaucrats sort of calling out of absolutely nowhere saying, we need this now. We've got a Senate Estimates Committee meeting, you know, tomorrow afternoon. Yeah. We need these answers today. And... you know, there was just no consistency, there was no forward planning, there was no structure, it was just chaotic.
There's been a real dismantling of capacity and expertise within the public service. It's really happened over the past 40 years. One of the issues is that in terms of policy delivery and strength of public service advice, it actually affects the quality of what can be done. And I think part of that's, you know, that's partly what this review is looking at, is how we give the public service... the tools it needs to be able to deliver policy and sort of do the types of things that you're saying you can't get done, which is, you know, appropriate responding.
Misha, we've run out of time, unfortunately. Thank you for coming into the studio this morning.
No worries.
Best wishes for the coming season and the new year.
And same to
you. And we look forward to having many, many more discussions into next year. We'd certainly like to focus on the federal election next year, so we'd like to bring you in for some more detailed and in-depth analysis as we move into that space.
It's going to be a busy time. I'm looking forward to it.
Good on you.
Thank you.
See you.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.